right, guys. Today we are joined by John Fern. He is an endurance and adventure coach. John, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, had a really nice start to the day. Skinned up a mountain, skied back down, and then went for a hike up to a beautiful lake this afternoon, and now back home. Yeah, so not a bad day, shall we say.
You're living the life, living the life.
Yeah.
What part of the world are you in, John?
Based just outside Chamonix, so living in the Chamonix Valley, French Alps.
Very nice, very nice. And in that part of the world, how's it been affected by the global pandemic we've been having? Seems like obviously you're still out doing a few bits, so it's not too crazy there.
I mean, it started for us back March the 17th. I remember the day because there wasn't much snow. We chucked skis on our backpacks and we cycled up to the snow line. And so we're just coming around to a year now. So the major thing that we've had in this valley is there's been no ski season. So no lifts are running, no holidays allowed, etc. So for us locals, it's not so bad because we just ski tour, which means we stick them on and we get up the mountains and we come back down. But yeah, for a lot of industry, it's really, really difficult. It's been hard.
For sure.
Yeah. So it's not been great. And the differences with France and the UK, I think we started our lockdowns really early and they were really strict.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's kind of eased off. And now the UK seem to have flipped and you're doing your really hard lockdowns. And we're kind of, we have to be indoors by 6 p.m. and we're not allowed out before 6 a.m., but that's it.
Okay, that's not too bad. I kind of guess that's in with the daylight hours kind of around this time of year, maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah, it's starting to get lighter in the evening, so you're starting to get itchy and want to be out longer for sure.
Definitely. And John, where did you originate from? Are you from the UK originally?
Yeah, lived down the south of England, Bournemouth, Salisbury area. I was born and raised sort of Kent, firstly, and then moved, obviously. So, a man of Kent. We still have a home in the UK, which we let out. So it's our kind of like feet in two camps, so to speak. You know, if everything goes a little bit south here, we can still get back to the UK because we won't mention the whole Brexit thing because this isn't not a political podcast.
No, we haven't got so much time to go into that side of things.
Definitely not.
But lovely. I know Bournemouth well. I'm actually based in Poole myself. So
very close.
Yeah. Lovely. So when did it all start for you then? When did this adventure into becoming an endurance coach, an adventure coach, an athlete as well, when did it kick off for you in the UK?
As a real young lad, as 9 years old, I was diagnosed with ADHD, or what was called back then hyperactivity. And I was really, really fortunate that my school just threw me into sport. They kind of like, he isn't going to sit still, he's not behaving, let's not kick him out, let's throw sport at him. And ever since then, somehow sport has always been my go-to, and it's kind of developed through mainstream sports, and then it went more into like surf instructing, kayak instructing, sports science degree, co-wrote masters, and then it went more down the direction of the adventure again. So it's swung around, but yeah, it's definitely firmly placed at the moment in the endurance and the adventure side of the industry.
No, it's interesting you said about ADHD, because when I remember when I was at school, I was on the cross country team, and one of the other really good cross country athletes had ADHD. And one of his main things to like keep his focus, to keep him going at school, was to do sport. He was good at football. He was good at cross country. He was pretty much good at all sports. And that was his kind of thing he grasped to at school and what made him like graduate in the end. So it's amazing that that's the same for you.
No, it is really good. Like I said, I was really, really fortunate. Unfortunately, those teachers have passed away now. There's Mr. and Mrs. Bunnell at the primary school, and they locked onto it. And, you know, I could have just been another kid with issues that just got in trouble and bounced school to school. But they took the time and the energy to realize what I needed to do with my energy. And it's been an absolute go-to. And the thing I find with it quite funny now is I'll still use it as a way to control. But as we get older, we kind of like, we get the agitated side, but we don't recover from the exercise as quick. So we're kind of like, I need to go out, but I'm too tired to go out. So yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, for sure. Age catches up with us all. Recovery is much needed, definitely. But so where did the athlete side start for you then? Was that in like early teens?
What, for myself competitively?
When did you start competitive sport?
Junior international athletics was my go-to. It was actually high jump and 4x100 meter relays. And I had an amazing coach at school. He was one of the PE teachers as well. And something back then, even when I was about 12 or 13, I would love to take the 11-year-olds, the first years, and take them out and show them what I was doing. And I kind of learned that I had more of an affinity with helping others do than I did myself. I love to take part as a way of coping and challenging myself, but actually the reward from helping others just kind of like tipped the scales. So it was at a very, very young age. And I think it was after 5 years, my coach actually moved schools, and actually kind of really left me in a limbo and made me really aware of just how important that kind of a role model, because coaching isn't necessarily just about the physical side and the psychological side of an event or a challenge. It's actually just being there holistically as a person as well. You become really friendly with a lot of people. On the adventure side, you're coaching people that are going to places that it is life or death. So their fitness is actually that important, and their psychology is that important. You can't not kind of get close to people. So yeah, there's a definite connection with that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Especially as you mentioned adventure racing there, they're going to extreme situations. Some of them very experienced, some people not as experienced. So they're really, really looking for that kind of connection. They've got to trust in the person that's teaching them, that's coaching them, to give the best information.
Yeah, but,
it's cool. And when you said you moved more towards like the extreme style of sport a little bit later on, what was the first kind of extreme event you've done?
I still believe the only athlete to have run across and mountain biked across the Alps. So that's completed Transalpine, Transalpine. They're 7 days, continual stages across the mountains. That was my transition more, I think, from stepping away from real competition and thinking, I'm getting older. I've done a lot of raced Ironman around the world. I've done other things. It's kind of like, actually, the challenge element is becoming more important to me. And that those events really made that click. And I was kind of like, my racing element can just go to one side. I want to focus on personal challenge and personal development as well in that direction.
No, definitely. We've seen a bit of a rise this year where there's been less events. There's been less like official events on. People are going towards a lot of fastest known time routes. You've got Land's End, John O'Groats. That's like a very big famous challenge. You've seen a lot of top end athletes, Kilian Jornet going for 24-hour. There's different people going for different challenges, but definitely seeing people move towards something same as you found, like a bit more of a personal challenge, personal goals. That's amazing. Across the Alps, what was that like? Was that a pretty crazy terrain up there?
Yeah, I mean, you're going across a lot of summits, some over 3,000 meters, and you're in shorts and a run top. You've obviously got all of your safety stuff in your vest, but you're quite exposed and you're traveling very, very light. So you mentioned Kilian there. You kind of want to go as light and as quickly as you possibly can. It's an eye-opener. I'd say the biking side of it is harder, but then I'm not as much a natural biker, and the technical side of getting down off the mountains is a little bit more challenging. So on foot, I was a lot more comfortable. But the places you go are just beautiful, absolutely stunning. The stage villages, starts and finishes, are quite small places. So they're not your big, like your Chamonix or Morzines or anything. They're quite small. So you get a really good atmosphere there.
No, definitely. And seen kind of a rise in that mountain running with sky running, making it a bit more popular to like the normal watcher or trail people who are interested in trail running. You're seeing like Kilian Jornet, John Alban doing sky running races. Was that kind of style of like scrambling across the top of mountains?
Some only in very small sections. I mean, believe it or not, he actually lived in the apartment just down from me for a long time before they moved to Norway. So he's in this valley. He's obviously really well known. He pushes those boundaries. You know, he's an amazing talent, and there are other people similar to him that do those things. In a racing environment, I wouldn't feel so safe. When I go into the higher mountains, say Mont Blanc, which he will run up and down in like 5-6 hours. You know, I could do a couple of days going to the summit and back. You know, so it's it's very different. And I'll have crampons and ice axe and be treating it as a very different environment to him. But I mean, YouTube is an absolute wash with those Solomon videos that you see nowadays. And they do inspire people because you're kind of holding your breath thinking, how? You know, how has he not just fallen off the side of there? So
it's very inspiring. Phenom, and it's crazy some of the feats he's managed to achieve over the years. So for yourself, what you said, you've done some Ironman races and some 70.3s and qualified for world championships, I believe, one year at the 70.2.
Yeah, 2009 at Wimbledon, which doesn't exist anymore. It used to be one of the world's hardest 70.3s. It was Wimbledon and Monaco. I don't think Monaco exists anymore either. They've gone by the by, but they were really tough, hilly. The bike ride at Wimbledon is brutally hilly, and then the run was a much more of a trail-focused run, a little more similar to like Exterra. And I absolutely loved that. It was a beautiful venue in Exmoor, stunning. So, yeah, I qualified there. I didn't take my slot because I was pursuing Kona, and I missed Kona by two places. So one of those, yeah.
So close,
wow. Yeah. Twice that's happened. You have to sit there and listen to the roll down and, yeah.
No, good. But what's the most recent project you've been working on? Is there any kind of like personal project or personal events you've been doing as an athlete still?
Yeah, I mean, 17 years ago, I summited Tibukal in Morocco, which is the highest mountain in North Africa. It's 4,167 meters. And I went back on my son's birthday, actually, because he was a year old at the time. I went back and I ran up in 6 hours, 57 minutes and back down, which is something that took 3 days to do before. So that was my Killian kind of like effort, but it's nowhere near as technical as Mont Blanc or Everest. But at the moment, we were due to start April the 1st as a bit of a joke given the last 12 months, but I'm kayaking the length of France on all the inland waterways. It's 1,235 kilometers. But at the moment, there's some parts of France that you're not allowed to travel through. So,
logistical nightmare.
Yeah. So, but everything's in place. Sponsors are amazing. Boats are all good to go. As soon as we get the COVID all clear, then that will happen, which will be really exciting.
Nice. That'd be very interesting to watch your progress. Are you going to be putting that out live on your Instagram or website?
Yeah, I will do live Instagrams. We'll make a little bit of a mini doco on it as well. It's kind of more to try and get other people to take on different challenges and realize it doesn't have to cost the earth. It doesn't have to be life-threatening. You know, you can find challenges within your own country, within your own county, especially with the last 12 months where travel so restricted. I chose something that was based in France that shouldn't be impacted by travel, and lo and behold, it's impacted by travel.
Yeah, unfortunately, everything's impacted right now, which is crazy. But no, it sounds like a great endeavor, a very interesting project for you to go on.
Cheers.
But obviously, alongside your athletic endeavours, you've pursued coaching as well. And I've seen from talking to you, you've had a very strong interest in coaching from a young age. How has being a coach been for you? It seems like you've coached athletes from all different backgrounds, adventure racing, triathlon, running, mountaineering. What's that been like as a coach? There's so many different facets to look at.
It's amazing. It keeps everything fresh. The most important thing for me is, as a coach, we can learn from all these other areas. A lot of coaches, the great coaches, but they're, say, a triathlon coach, and that's all they will ever think about or look at. Whereas actually, when you start to, say, look at an ultra runner or you look at some other athletes, there's things that cross over that are actually really helpful. And as a coach, we've always got to be trying to push our understanding of the physiology and the psychology of what goes on with ourselves and with our athletes. And so having a wider array of, I guess, your arsenal's wider with all these different types of events, you learn so much more from so many people. And that's what really inspires me to keep going and keep pursuing it and keep perfecting it. Because no way do I know everything. Never will. You know, it's always a journey of learning as a coach as well as an athlete. So I'm always looking to find that next way to find something that could help one athlete over here that's doing, say, an obstacle event, and then there's one over here that's maybe rowing the Atlantic. There might suddenly be something that happens. And for me, I think the rowing the Atlantic ones is in some ways the more challenging to coach because I don't row. So I've had to learn an awful lot about the rowing technique, the ways they've got to train, as well as mixing in the psychology of being stuck in a little boat in the middle of the Atlantic, which freaks me out. It's the one thing I need to go and do because it scares me more than anything. But that kind of inspires me to go research and keep pushing my own knowledge, which then obviously filters back down to the athletes.
No, it's definitely, as you just mentioned then, you'd like to do something that scares you or something that's unknown to you. You must see that so many times with these athletes coming to you like, I've never done this, but it scares me enough for me wanting to do it, especially more of the personal kind of endeavors and projects. How have you found that?
It's an interesting one, and it's really nice sometimes to actually have an athlete come to me with something that's new and that scared them, that's actually new to me as well. So you're starting your journey, your process with them, which gives that stronger connection again. I've had, was it in 2019-20 season in the South Pole, an amazing lady, Wendy Searle, mum of four, phenomenal, never done that before. It obviously has to do the safety training prior to going to Antarctica, but she was the fastest lady against professional athletes, you know, to reach the South Pole unsupported. And that's scary in the sense that you're on your own, you know, no one's coming to get you in a hurry. It's going to take a while to be rescued. You've got 37 to 40 days of solitude whilst working your butt off, trying not to get too hot, trying not to get too cold. It's an incredibly scary place to go. So working through that with her, we came up with great training practices, ice baths, different horrible, as she'd say, the horrible, nasty sessions that I would set her. But when she finished it, she was so grateful for having done those.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think anyone that comes to me with a new challenge is great. I love that. I love to be made to think, can I actually coach this person? And I would always be honest if I thought, actually, do you know what? I can't do this. It hasn't happened yet, touch wood. But I would always say, do you know what? You know, I can't do this. Like, say, with the rowers, I get more rowers now. That, again, it comes from once you've worked with one and then you get it spirals, they talk, etc. But, you know, that initial one is, it's a learning curve. And again, it sends me back to the drawing board, makes me revisit basic physiology, etc., different things, which is always good. Every coach should always kind of hit a reset button and go, actually, you know, maybe I'm getting too complacent with how I coach and train people. I need to rewind, go back and have a look at things again.
No, definitely. That kind of brings up two key points for me from that. You said there was like a mum of four. She's trained to do something. She's gone and done amazingly well going out to Antarctica and then racing across there. Do you think there's a lot of people that don't really know that they could do a challenge or they could be really good at something until they give that a go or kind of break through the barrier?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I think it's a really good question. I think the way that, I guess, modern society is, well, we have so many barriers that pop up, and most of them are barriers in our own minds that we create through certain social pressures, social standing, social placing, etc., which actually there are ways beyond those, which, again, is something I love to help people with, is to try and make them realize that they could achieve more than what they're actually doing. And I would love in some way to actually reach people and spread the word that actually you don't have to be complacent with where you are. You know, you can do some of these things. You won't necessarily have to be as quick as Killian, but hey, you can go up a mountain. But a lot of people say, well, no, I just can't do that. Well, you can. You know, let's look at how we remove those barriers for you and get you into that place. There's nothing more rewarding than seeing someone that's had to remove an awful lot of barriers to actually get where they want to be, or maybe even where they didn't even know they wanted to be. And then suddenly they're there and it's like, wow, I've actually done this. I worked with another amazing athlete, Sarah Crossland, who's a brain tumor survivor and went through real battles. And she's now, she's climbed mountains. She's coming out here to do Mont Blanc. She's run ultra marathons. And still, you know, she has balance issues and sickness issues, but she works her way through it. And, you know, it's super inspiring when you get to meet and work with people like that.
Yeah, no, I think from that, it's kind of like sport is one of those ultimate barrier breakers. Because you can use sport in a lot of different ways. It can be an endurance sport event. It can be a cycling event, some kind of event. There'll always be some kind of sport you can do to break a barrier that you thought was like a leveler.
So just to mention as well is like, you know, coming away, like I said, originally was like the team and the more institutionalized sports that were there.
Yeah.
There's so many more breakaway sports now, and there's so much more kudos and respect for the extreme sports, or even skateboarding, BMXing. You know, the world has opened up to all of these really creative and amazing sports. Whereas you look back 30, 40 years ago, it was, you know, it was athletics, football, rugby. They dominated everything. If you did something to the side of that, if you were one of these groundbreakers like Tony Hawk or whoever, you were like shunned. It was like, well, who are you? And yet now you look, you know, they dominate the world. And it, I think it's really good to see. And I hope that more things, more progression comes along those lines.
Yeah, no, definitely. And the second point I was going to mention from the bit you said before was that with all of these kind of barrier breaking and projects and sporting events, the one key thing from that is a coach is there to help you. It seems to be the people that are excelling or are doing very well at this are having a coach, somebody that they can bounce these ideas off, help them with the training. Obviously, you're coaching a lot of amazing people to do stuff. I'm sure they've positively responded to your coaching and improved over the different times. How have you seen that as a coach? Has it helped them having a coach? What's the kind of feedback from those athletes?
It's really interesting. So I say to most athletes that I start to work with, and they'll probably quote me, it's not brain surgery. You know, it's actually quite a simplistic approach, and the world kind of with everything complicates things, you know, it adds new methods, new things, next, have this pair of shoes, have that bike, and it just becomes crazy complicated.
It's crazy.
It's like, well, I've researched it and everyone's saying there's this new invention called the skipping rope I see at the moment. It's like, well, the skipping rope's been around for I don't know how long. It's like you ask a boxer and, you know, they've been skipping.
Decades.
But it seems like it's a new training method now to skip. Anyway, so the I always tell them that what I try to do is you're taking away the stress of trying to organize their training. What can happen with a lot of individual athletes is questions. So they're always like, oh, was that right? Oh, should I run a bit more? Oh, it's a beautiful day. I'm going to double my run or my bike ride. Or whereas a coach would be, no, we stick to what we're doing. We follow a systematic pattern. We develop and we progress. And for many to start with, it's difficult because actually it seems really simple and uncomplicated. And they're kind of like, well, is this working? Is this right? And they hit a period, could be 4 to 6 weeks, where normal physiological adaptation starts to take place. And they're like, oh, I get this. Wow, I just ran that mile like so much quicker with my heart rate still at the same intensity as it was 4 weeks ago. I'm like, well, yeah, that's fitness development. And when they get that, as any athlete gets a physical connection to something, because we're all obviously we're physical people, we get feedback all the time from what we're doing in our training and our sports. Once they get that, it's like a click, a switch has gone. They're like, okay, yeah, I get it. I'll listen and I'll follow. And they continue. I have 3-time world endurance mountain bike champion, Steve Day, that before I started working with him, he was just thrashing himself. And he was still, he's an incredible athlete, an amazing athlete. Yeah. But I just slowed him down. And then a year and a half later, he goes on a spree of winning 3 world titles. And all I've technically done is got him to stop thrashing himself. So, yeah, there is little bits more to it, maybe the study and stuff behind it. But on the surface of things, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think what you're saying there is like education is kind of key, but it's more for you to like simplify the education down to those athletes and just kind of give them the plug and play plan that they can follow. But what I've said to people I've coached in the past is like consistency. It's just consistency of hitting those things that being put out by the coach. And it's over time. We're very impatient nowadays. It's all, I want it. If it's not instantaneous, if it's not a like on Instagram, people don't want to know.
No. It's that instant gratification that they want. Yes, yeah, it's
definitely.
And, you know, Instagram everywhere is full of it. I mean, I've signed up for so many get my 6-pack in 3 weeks. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah,
sorry, I shouldn't make fun, but I am. Sorry.
No, it's true. There's so much information out there now. Unfortunately, a lot of information is just flair and talk. But obviously, people like yourself, you've been coaching for how many years? 20 years, something like this?
Yeah, it's probably over that. But I'd say professionally, 20 years. Like I said, I've always had an interest in it. I'm now 44. So, yeah, it's got to be 20 years professionally across, like I say, many endurance and adventure sports.
That's it. Yeah. So it's many years of education, you learning new things, changing with the times, tried and tested methods, and the fact, what you like you're saying about the skip and rope, things that were great in the past coming back again, like retro things. Yeah. I've seen loads of people like, oh, I found this. I'm like, 20 years ago they were doing that.
Yeah.
I've seen people doing this, but over like the recent year, I guess the big one, what sports science has really improved a lot, and that's helped. How do you test your athletes? What kind of testing do you do for them? So, I'm sure that's a big part of it.
Yeah, when I was based in the UK, I utilized my university that I graduated from in Southampton. So I had a really good relationship with them. That's where I helped co-write the MSc Masters in Athlete Development and Peak Performance. And I'd forever use that lab. I've done hundreds of tests in their lab. And I utilize them a lot because I love universities because they're always learning. They're not just a business trying to put something out there to sell. To them, it's like they have students, PhD students, MSc students, they're wanting to learn and develop. So you're getting really up-to-date methods and protocols.
Yeah.
Which I loved. But then I also have a great working relationship with Talk Nutrition, and they have a testing facility that they use as well. So I've sent athletes to them predominantly for the biking because they're very much a biking sort of testing facility. But I do love that. I'm by no means, I don't call myself a geeky scientist. As I'd say to anyone in the lab is give me the numbers and then I'll use the psychology to get the numbers across to the athlete. I'm like a conduit between the science and the person, because the numbers are like, I had to do it for my degree, etc., and I understand it, but I don't get turned on by it like, so we say, some of the lab people do. But it does have a massive use. But again, when I first sort of started, it would cost so much money to get someone to a lab. It was only professional athletes that were doing it. But now you can get into university labs all around the country for pretty cheap. It's a good subsidiary income for universities. And so the pricing's come down, the quality of testing's gone up, the types of testing have improved as well and expanded. So it's a really important element, but I wouldn't want it to be a barrier to someone. Because it's still, you can still train and be exceedingly successful. I have athletes that don't ever get that kind of testing. We just do in-house testing. And, maybe they could get better results if they went to a lab. But, who knows?
You can get so much data nowadays just from like a watch, so much information. Okay, it may not be the same level of a lab test. It may not be 98% or in those top ranges, but it gives you a base level, something to work from or towards.
Definitely.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah, the software behind these, the watches and Training Peak software, etc. From a coaching point of view, I mean, when I first started, I'd email someone a Word document and just hope that they did what I told them. I mean, see, I know it's crazy, isn't it? Yet now,
yeah.
You know, technology freaks me out, if I'm honest. But it's amazing. I can see what someone in South Africa's just done for their run, literally second by second. And there's no hiding as well. You used to say, oh, did you do your session? Yeah. If you say that now, it's like, no, you didn't. It's like, yeah.
Your heart rate was 55.
Yeah. Did you stick to your base or your tempo? Oh, no. Oh, what? It was through the roof. So, yeah, that, I mean, and as well, from a business model, it's mm-hmm. made what I do so much more manageable. You know, you can turn it into a career. You can work with people all around the world. Does make it very useful.
Yeah, definitely. It keeps people accountable. It helps you. Yeah. Deliver the sessions and continue delivering sessions that are going to improve them, not having to revisit stuff they've not done or said they did and never did, which definitely. is an interesting one.
Yeah.
I've had a little look on your website and seen all of the different things that you do. I want to talk about kind of adventure sport. How deep are you coaching people currently with adventure sport, or are you participating yourself within that area?
So by adventure sport for me is working with, it could be an adventure photographer. So if you look at the likes of Jimmy Chin, the main one I worked with was Alex Buys, a French photographer, an Olympic photographer as well for the climbing, etc. And it, for them, it's about, they've got to be fitter than the people they go into the mountains with, because they've either got to be ahead, they've got to work out camera stuff. And yeah, that was amazing for me, because I actually have been on several shoots and expeditions with him. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, okay, yeah, I see the demand here. Okay, yeah, I'm blowing out my butt. How on earth would I get a camera and be ready to do something? So that kind of, that's one area of adventure. There's people training for 8,000-meter summits, which, again, because of the current climate, things have all been bumped. And so people have been put on hold for a lot of those. We've got more people training for the South Pole, more people rowing the Atlantic for the Talisker Challenge this year in December, the start date. Trying to think, I'm probably forgetting people, but yeah. So it's quite a wide array of adventure. And for that, for me as well, it puts me, especially with the mountain athletes, I put myself into what some people say is dangerous places. They're not dangerous because you're doing it properly. But for me, you know, dealing with exposure and stuff at times is quite alarming. And so, you know, I've made like Alex work incredibly hard, and then he'll take me up and scare me witless in some places where it's kind of like, okay. But again, that's helping my progression and understanding of an environment, because when you adventure training people, it's great understanding the physiology, it's great understanding psychology, but if you don't understand the environment in which they are placing to do their activity, it actually almost halves your input as a coach. So for that, my polar athletes, I'll send myself out on minus 12, minus 15 nights and go and do cold camp setups, because I've got to understand the impact of carrying a load and then setting up a camp, etc. And I'll do these kind of things just randomly every now and then when I feel I need to refresh what I'm actually coaching.
Get out there in the environment and feel what they feel, kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you work with like photographers as well. I've never kind of thought of them as needing training, but I guess they do. You think of stuff like Free Solo with Alex Jimmy Arnold. Like he must have trained so hard to get those shots, because he was up the wall with him and doing those kind of different things. Not everything's a drone picture nowadays, though it looks like it. But yeah, those extreme kind of environments, they've got to be as fit as either the athletes or as the environment needs them to be. So that's super interesting. What's What's the most extreme environment you've trained somebody for then? Was it in the North Pole or one of the poles?
I'd say that the South Pole is probably one of the more extremes from a psychological point of view, because you've got to have your head squared away. If I remember saying to Wendy, you know, we've just got to have your head dialed in before you get there. You can't take any kind of niggles or stresses or worries, because that will cost you dearly. It's going to cost you to possibly fail. And it's a big expense going on these kind of expeditions as well. So that's one. And then the Atlantic rowing one is quite a freaky one for people. It's weird, the psychology, because some people, they don't quite appreciate the psychology side of it, because of all the training is much more either on an erg or on a river. They don't get to go on their boats very much. And then suddenly they're presented with these like 20-foot swells and the boat's flipped upside down. And you're waiting for it to right itself. It's pitch black. You can't see anything in the water. You've lost nearly all your kit because you didn't shut your cabin door. Yeah, they're kind of like, you know, it starts to make me feel ill thinking about it. I'd say those two environments for me, are pretty extreme. But then the mountain environments can turn very quickly. So I've been caught before, even on simple things out my back door, where suddenly temperatures drop through the roof, it's white out, you can't see where you are. And if at that point your fitness isn't there and you're getting tired, you start to make mistakes. So that's where they've got to be totally happy with their fitness. So I've even done some fitness work with guides here in the valley as well. And these guys are super fit, but when they're on a long season, they're getting exhausted. Plus they have other challenges of their own that they actually want to fulfill, as well as taking people up and down Mont Blanc. So, you know, that's where, as I've mentioned near the start of it, it's where fitness becomes more life and death. It sounds kind of like really dramatic, but actually if you're training an Ironman athlete, the worst thing's going to happen, they DNF. If you're training somebody on a 4,000 meter peak, an 8,000 meter peak, and they're exhausted, the worst thing that's going to happen, as we see K2 this winter, is you don't come back. And so for me, it's kind of like, it heightens my awareness of how much I've got to put into what I give those people.
Yeah, no, definitely. And kind of just saying that, to extremes where, like, an organized sport, generally most of them, the worst will be maybe you'll get injured or maybe you just won't finish. But those kind of other areas, it could be life and death in some extreme cases, which is pretty eye-opening when you think about it. And yeah, like I said, I didn't even really kind of think about the fitness element for them or training as such. They just kind of are there, they're doing those things. It's interesting to kind of bring it more towards the front of your mind. That's pretty crazy. Wow.
And it's super interesting as well.
Definitely. It's always interesting to hear about new things or things you didn't really think about before. Where for yourself has been the most interesting place you visited or trained or even visited yourself as kind of like to do an adventure or some fitness kind of areas?
So I went to Aconcagua in South America. Lose track of time now. I think it's nearly 2 years ago. That's an amazing adventure in South America. South America is beautiful. I was really pleased to be able to go there and experience their mountains. The Himalayas are beautiful. I've been to Everest Base Camp, but never beyond. I'd look to go back there. Don't know whether 8,000 meter peaks are my thing or not. There's something I have on the cards, which I was meant to have done, which was to go to Choroyu, which is 8,200 meters. But that was actually in carrying my bike to ride my bike on the summit plateau to break the world record. We missed the opportunity of travel because of COVID. And then also the Chinese changed permits as well. So there was a lot of complication. But that's still in my mind as a maybe. So it's always been mountain-based, but then I love to surf. So I've surfed Biarritz, Hossiger in France. I've surfed for a long time as a surf instructor in North Devon. So for me, at times, I get a real urge that I've just got to get to the sea. And being nice. Here, for us, it's an 8-hour drive to get to the nearest surfable beach.
Oh, wow.
So it doesn't happen very often.
No, that's no fun. I do like being near the beach. I'm very lucky to live right by.
Yeah, where you are, yeah.
Literally just outside, but that's pretty cool.
When we do come back and see family, we always stay sort of Bournemouth and Poole, and obviously I have a board still with family there, so I will always just go. I even actually go, if it's flat at Bournemouth or Boscombe Pier, I'll just paddle out. It's just because it's kind of like, look, I live in the mountains, and, you know, I haven't been here for a year, I need to just get wet.
There's plenty of people in the mornings. Yeah. And the very, very small swirl that we have here. there's still plenty of people out there. There's so many exotic places and places around the world that you've mentioned then. Obviously, you do some stuff in the UK as well, some training camps. Talk to us about those a little bit.
My training camps historically had all been abroad. So I do training camps in the Alps for triathletes and cyclists. I've done them in Spain. I even did some work in Oman, which was helping the Oman triathlon governing body and the setting up of what now is they have the Muscat 70.3. Lovely guy that organized that. But the UK, I was going to be doing some this year. I thought I was going to come back. My partner and I were going to have an extended period back in the UK, and I'd set up this 3 opportunities to run Scarfell, Snowdon and Ben Nevis. And people could do it either as all 3 or they could just do it as a 1 weekend and do one of them.
Yeah.
But at the moment, all these things are kind of on hold. I have athletes come out to me here and I do 1-to-1 here. So Wendy came out before she went to the pole. I have Preet coming out as well, another polar athlete who I'll have over here working, and Ed. So there's quite a few that will come out and I'll just do 1-to-1s with. But no, training camps, when you have a large number of people, they're quite tiring. You're kind of like you're on hospitality mode 24/7 as well as instructing or doing whatever you're doing. So as my age now, I kind of prefer the 1-to-1s a little bit more manageable.
And I guess you can give your time directly to that person as well, especially when it's something like a polar adventure. It's going to take a lot of information, a lot of training, very specific training and information as well. I guess you need that a bit more when it's like that.
It's quite handy that in our valley, Simon Abrams is one of the ALE, which is people that pretty much run Antarctica and people that need to go there. If you're going to go, he has to assess you. So it ties in quite nicely that they can spend some time here and they get assessed by Simon as well. So
Oh, there you go. You got it set up. Perfect.
Yeah, that was accidental. I'd like to say it was all planned, but no, it wasn't.
This valley sounds very interesting. I think
there's a lot, and I mean, down the road we have the large Spartan race, the Morzine, which is a brutal. They have the ultra Spartan there. I actually coach a French guy. You've raced it, so it's a tough
2018,
one.
Very tough.
pretty hilly in Morzine, and I have a French athlete that I work with. He's an ultra runner and a Spartan athlete, and I think he's just told me he's got an invite of the Europeans in Switzerland in September. Yeah. Which is just down the road from here. So he's then messaged and gone, oh, right, so I'm doing this ultra, but can we actually now also focus on? I'm like, yeah, no problem.
Yes, definitely. Hope, fingers crossed, I shall be there if the travel was brilliant. Okay for the UK. Morzine 2018 was brutal.
Yeah.
I nearly died up the mountain, but it was I made it in the end. It was all good. No, that's amazing. Some really interesting stuff there, John.
Cheers.
Where can people find out a bit more about you and what you do coaching-wise and your projects?
The best bet is to go to the website, which is e3coach.com. To follow, I have an E3 Coach Instagram and I have my own personal one. I always think my own personal one is I try to keep it more focused on myself. And the company one is much more focused around training and the athletes that I work with. So it's a way to help people see who I work with, become inspired by what other people are doing. but that information is definitely on the website.
Yep, I've had a look at your work Instagram, and the pictures are amazing. Many mountains, yeah. Many cool pictures, so that's cool. But your personal one is just selfies, so people don't need to.
yeah, selfies with a blurred mountain somewhere. Yeah.
No, that's amazing. John, this is kind of the time I'd ask where what you'd be doing this year, what you're on the horizon, but obviously you've said a few things and they're a bit hampered by COVID and current restrictions, but obviously you've got a mind, you've got many projects in your mind ready for the future. Is there any other ones you haven't mentioned that you think you may go ahead and do?
Yeah, there's a much more long-term one, which we've already started planning, which is 2023, which is potentially a new traverse route across Greenland, working with the glaciologist as well. That we've got to go via two, I think they call them dig holes, which are permanent holes to measure the ice depth and different things. But it means that we'll create a new route, so long as no one goes and does it beforehand. But yeah, so the planning that goes into that, there's a lot of extra skills, even weapons handling, because of the wildlife is a little bit dangerous. So there's some extra skills I've got to go and acquire, and other team members have got to acquire. We've got a few training trips that we'll organise before we all meet over in Greenland. But yeah, that's I'm really excited about, because again, I'm going to learn a lot from doing that myself. The training side of it, as well as actually doing the it's going to be about, I think it's a month and a half probably on the snow, so yeah, it'll be really interesting. So that's the biggest one that's going on. The kayaking trip will be a fun one when that can go ahead, and then in between that one and going to Greenland, hopefully kayak around Iceland whilst getting off and summiting and skiing their three highest peaks is another person.
Oh, it's not bad. That sounds like a nice little holiday here, Iceland around.
Yeah, Iceland's absolutely beautiful. Kayaking around the outside of it in more winter, not maybe quite so fun, but
yeah, you may have to wear many a layer. But
so yeah, that's I think that's it. But I mean, I'm very, very fortunate. Here we can wake up and I can go and challenge myself every day, you know, and I'm aware that a lot of people don't have that. So to have gone ski up a mountain behind me and ski back down with a friend today, and then my partner we've got two huskies, walk them up to a beautiful lake up in the mountains. You know, these to me still are really important challenges, and in many ways they're more important to me and more valuable than the big trips, you know, to be able to go out the back door and appreciate what we have here.
Yeah, no, definitely. And how many years have you been living in that part of the world now?
So I've lived here now for 3 years, but I've been working backwards and forwards for now nearly 14 years here.
Oh wow, so you know the area by the back of your hand then.
Well, it's vast.
Yeah.
I'd say I'd know that by the back of my hand to certain altitudes, and then beyond certain altitudes, it becomes a little less known. Yeah.
There we go. No, definitely. Well, it's an amazing kind of journey you've been on over the many years to get to where you are. And it sounds like you've got so many projects in the pipeline. Hopefully that Greenland one sounds amazing. It could be like a groundbreaking one to set a new route, which is pretty cool. Well, I implore the listeners to go and check out John's website, and definitely check out his work Instagram to see those amazing images. John, it's been a real pleasure to chat to you today and learn more about you, learn more about what you've done and your history as well.
No, I really appreciate it. I could reciprocate now and ask you all about yourself and where you see what you're doing going, because I think it's really interesting. And I think the world of podcasts and stuff, especially in the last 12 months, has been a great way to reach out to people and for people to stay connected and feel connected. So I think it's amazing what you guys are doing. So yeah, keep up the good work, and yeah, I look forward to following your guys' journey with what you do. And if you do come to Switzerland, let me know and I'll pop in the car and pop over and see you.
Definitely, that'd be great. No, thank you very much. It's it makes the podcast job a lot easier when you've got very interesting people on the podcast with great stories. So thank you very much again, John. And
no problem. Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your day, and catch you soon.
Cheers. Thank you very much.